ברוכים הבאים לחותיי. We're involved now in a new sefer. Started sefer Vayikra last week. And sefer Vayikra is, in the eyes of the masses, the most, I want to be careful of my words though, because we're talking about Torah. You want to call it an interesting, for guys a little more liberal, they'll say boring. You open the Bereshit, you have action stories, the brothers, Adam, Cain, Hevel, there's action every parasha. Shemot, Yitziat Mitzrayim, miracles, plagues, Paro, Bamidbar, Korach, there's stories. Everyone likes a good story. Vayikra, a little dry to the palate. Korbanot, bring this one for that sin, this one for that, 1 year old, 2 year old, 6 of them, 5 of them, 3 of them, eat it at night, the next morning. It's vital. The Korbanot, it says in the old days, that's what the world stands on. It's one of the pillars of the world, the Korbanot. We're not minimizing it, but our dumb brains, our small little heads, don't comprehend these massive topics. And therefore, it's dry learning. Tonight, we're going to try to bring some flavor into Sefer Vayikra. And we're going to try to learn a very important lesson. What does it mean important? This is one of the types of classes that you say before you give the class. If this is the only class you ever went to in your life, and you never come back, you say, you know something, I don't like going into this room, the tiles are ugly, I don't come back to Torah Sefer anymore. It's worth it that you came here tonight. You're lucky, Mars, you made it. You're here. Good to have you. The Pasuk says, in the beginning of Parashat Vayikra, that's the Pasuk now. Gabby? Adam ki yakriv mikem. Korban, Hashem. When a fellow comes to bring a sacrifice in front of God, that she right away comes and says, Adam. Torah uses the word Adam. So that she says, when you bring a korban, you have to bring it like Adam Harishon. Just like Adam Harishon did not bring a korban from stolen property. Why didn't he bring a korban from stolen property? Because everything belonged to him. So too, when your fellow brings a korban to the Beit HaMikdash, you can't bring it from stolen goods. The guy ushers a korban from his neighbor's backyard, goes to the Kohen Gadol, how you doing? I have some item over here called the sheep. I stole it from my, of course, it's stolen goods, sorry. It's a big sign in front of the Beit HaMikdash. No stolen goods allowed on in this Beit HaMikdash. It has to be like Adam. Adam ki yakriv. When you bring your korban, it's got to be like Adam. Just like Adam didn't bring from stolen property, you can't bring a korban from stolen property. That's not she. It makes sense, by the way. No one say, hey, why not? You know, the whole concept of the korban is for kapara, for repentance, for atonement. Now you're going to steal a korban and ask Hashem for forgiveness? It's logical. I can't work like that. Listen to a Gemara. Wild. Gemara Gittin, Daf Nun He, side 1. Gemara says, let's say, hypothetically, guy stole a korban, went to the Beit HaMikdash, shalom, Mr. Kohen, gives him the korban. The Kohen doesn't know it's stolen goods. You know, you can't see from the korban if it's stolen or not. He takes the korban, slaughters it, puts it on the mizbeach, he eats it. Because part of the atonement of a korban is when the kohen eats from it. The kohen's eating from a korban is not like me and you eating. When we're eating, what are we thinking about? About ta'ava, lust, pleasure, ketchup, mustard, salt, steak sauce. We're involved in a very base thinking. Very animalistic desires. However, when the Kohen would eat from the Korban, He's thinking of kavanot. He's thinking of very lofty ideas. So imagine that. A kohen eating the korban has a power to wipe off sins from the guy who brought the korban. So a guy comes to the Beit HaMikdash and brings a stolen korban. Kohen doesn't know anything about it. Takes it, eats it. Then they find out that it was stolen goods. You know what the halacha says in the Gemara? Don't tell the kohen. Don't even make the guy bring another one. We don't go to the kohen. Hey, listen, Mr. Kohen, you ate stolen goods. Sorry, made a mistake. The guy showed it. He's got to bring another one. But what do you mean? We just said you can't bring a stolen korban. All of a sudden now we waive the rule? If nobody knew about it and the kohen ate and finished, we say, you know what? The guy's cut by our counts and leave everything. Keep quiet. Push it under the table. Scandal! Scandal in the Mikdash! And we're letting it go. Listen to why the Gemara says you let it go. Because if you're going to tell the kohen that he ate from a stolen korban, which was you ate from a korban that really wasn't holy, and you ate it inside the Beit HaMikdash in the holy area, that's a sin. If you're going to tell the kohen what he did, he's going to get depressed. You're going to put him in a very bad mood. And it's very dangerous to be in a bad mood. And it's very dangerous to be depressed. You're going to tell him, what? Chilak, what do I do? I ate from a stolen korban. I'm not eating any more korban on. I can't take this job. Too dangerous. There's problems. There's hassles. There's pitfalls. I fell. The Gemara says that if the kohen gadol gets depressed, the nimsah mizbeach batel. The mizbeach is going to be out of order because the kohen's not going to want to sacrifice anymore. Imagine that. The kohen that the Gemara says is zariz. He acts very speedily. He acts with very much energy. The kohen that does his job with such vibrance and such energy, full of life and full of happiness. The kohen that runs to and fro in the Beit HaMikdash, sprinkling the blood, sacrificing it, eating it, and then doing it again and again. The kohen's job is very difficult, from early in the morning to late at night. This kohen that works with such a desire and such energy, when depression will set in, his whole taste and his whole feeling will be taken away, and the rabbis suspected that this kohen will fall out, as they say. And if there's a fallout of the Kohanim in the Beit HaMikdash, you ain't going to have the Mizbeach working. If you don't have the Mizbeach working, it's a disaster. So look what the rabbis did in order to cut off depression. Look how bad it is in the eyes of the Hachamim to have a guy in a bad mood. You can't bring stolen goods on the Mizbeach. The rabbis did that, but they said, well, you can't bring a stolen Korban if it's going to affect the mood of the Kohen by telling him, that's a bigger problem. So the Beit Din gets together and says, we're going to make this Korban onerous. They have the power to do that. They don't usually do that. But they have the power to take anyone's property and say, Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker. It's onerous. So they have a way to make it not stolen. But why are they going through all these loopholes and all these things? You know why? Not to upset someone. Because when somebody gets upset, especially if he's a big man like the Kohen Gadol, the consequences are frightening. I say that again. The consequences of what a depressed man can do are frightening. Listen to a word we're going to say here. From the giant of Musav, the great Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, Zeches Tzaddik Livracha, the Mashgiach of the Miri Yeshiva in Israel. The Mashgiach explains the way of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is a very patient guy. The Yetzer Hara is a salesman. He works on commission, and he has a very big interest to make the sale. His sale is to make you do a avon. The bigger the avon, the bigger the commission. We should serve God the way the Yetzirah serves God. He does his job 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. He's loyal to his job, he's committed to his job, and he's good at it. But you want to know the key to his success? Might want to use this in your retail stores. The key to the Yetzirah's success is he's very, very patient. He doesn't go for the big bear out right away. You know, you don't wake up tomorrow morning and the Yetzirah whispers in your ear, go to church. Because he knows you're going to church. I'm not going to church. I'm going to do what you guys see you later. He knows if he oversells, if he goes for the overkill right away, you'll file him. So the Yetzirah has a game plan. He says, my goal is to get the guy to commit this big sin. I'm giving myself 30 years to get the guy to fall. The Yetzirah will work for 30 years systematically, every day, chip away, every day. Like the famous story I told you. The famous story I told you about the guy that got married. It's good to hear these stories again so you know what you're up against. Guy got married, religious guy, beautiful guy, made his wedding, mabruk, very nice. And as the people have, they have a wedding video. I can say myself today, I never saw my wedding video. I don't know if that's a praise or not. And my wife is going to find out that I didn't watch it. That's a problem. The wedding video. So the guy says, how am I going to watch the wedding video? We paid so much money, I don't have a TV. So the guy comes and says, well, listen, I'll get a TV with a little video. I don't watch TV. Television, Toyavad is so much better. I'm going to get the TV with it for the wedding. I'll get a cheap one, black and white TV. I'm not looking to watch TV. No cable, no nothing. TV with a small little recorder, what do you call it, a VCR. He goes, brings it home one night, he watches the wedding video. Alright, that's it. Takes the TV, puts it in his closet. That's it. I'm not a TV man. I just bought it for the wedding. You want to watch the wedding video? Takes it out 3 weeks later, watches it again. Yetzirah already has his foot in the door now. Yetzirah already, he's strategy. And Yetzirah, by the way, the next morning tells the guy, hey, make sure you don't watch that. That's no good. That was only for the wedding video. Oh, so yeah, very good. Yeah, okay. Yetzirah's with him. He's a con man. He's catching him. You always got it. When you're talking Yetzirah, you got to think of the guys. You ever see the guys in the city, the key card Monty guys? You ever see those guys in the city? You're standing there and you're watching a guy take cards, and he moves them very slow. And there's a stooge over there, and he goes, black! And he turns it over, black! The guy pays him $100. I don't believe it, this thing is a joke. So you say, it can't be, it's too good to be true, I'm gonna watch it one more time. The guy moves it very slow again, black! Black, $100! The guy walks away, stooge! He says, wow, this is a joke, this is an easy one! You go take out your thing, he's waiting here, so that'll suck you in. You take out your 100 bucks, you point to the guy, turns it over, red. See you later, buddy. Oh, what do you mean? I was watching it for 2 hours. Yetzirah's a champ. Very patient and very organized. Very prepared. He knows the job. You know, when you're sleeping for 8 hours, Yetzirah's standing right over you for 8 hours planning how to make you get a plate the next morning. So when you get up in the morning, you're ready to fight. He's there ready. He's in the ring, you're ready. He's throwing punches at you. He non-stop work. So the guy gets his video, watches it. Months later, a year later, Persian Gulf War breaks out. All right, Persian Gulf War. So the guy who would normally listen to the whole action on the radio, you know, the Scuds and the Patriots hitting each other, you hear radio action of it. Listen, this is a big thing. You gotta have it. I have a TV. I don't watch TV, but this is not normal. This is a war. Take out the TV from the closet. He leaves the video in there. Say, to Channel 4 to watch the Persian. No more. That's it. It's on our TV's terrible. Bring up. Does that for a little while. A year later. Yes, he's a friend of Shul. There's going to be a show on Channel 13, Cosmos, about the stars and the sun. This is creation, Hashem. This is very important. I'm talking about.
nature, man, God, whatever.
Very poor guys do it. Is.
Rabbi Miller talks about this all the time. I'm not
a TV guy, but I listen to it once to watch about the stars.
Anything wrong with it? I mean, actually, God, I know nothing. All right?
He doesn't turn on the TV a minute before the show.
8:30 on the... Turns it on. He watches Cosmos. He watches the stars, the sun, the moon. Ah, you know something? I can use TV for the right thing. You get religious from it. The pastor, they're more unbelievable. That's what I was getting at. He's waiting for the kill. 3 years pass, 4 years pass. Slowly, the guy, rationalizing kosher things. After a while, the guy says, already the TV's, it's on the counter already. Nice, too lazy, ready to put it back. One day, he comes home. He's tired, he wants to relax still. He says, you know something? Listen, to watch a movie, already if they're putting it on TV, how bad can it be already? One movie's going to hurt you. Yeah. Yes, and I tell him, oh, don't watch it, don't. Yes, fixing the guy up. Finally, he controls himself, well, I'm not going to watch it. The next night, he turns on the movie. Slowly, 5 years, 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line, this guy finds himself a member of a video store. The guy finds himself renting all type of perverted material. The guy finds himself so addicted to this item called television, or for that matter today, they have another name for it, they have internet and so on and so forth. He's so addicted to it that already he's waking up late in the morning because he's staying up all night. And the rabbi calls him up, where were you in class last week? I was sick, I didn't fit. So already the Yetzer Hara is successful. Took him 15 years, but he got a guy that was going to Minyan every morning to wake up late and miss Minyan. A guy that's going to class to miss it and perverted a clean man's mind. All because why brought a TV into his house to watch his wedding video. What a genius. What a genius. Very patient, very smart. So you got to be careful. The guy knows his business. However, the rabbi from the Miri Yeshiva says, while, as a rule, the Yetzer Hara works slow, there are some situations that the Yetzer Hara works in an accelerated fashion and can make a guy fall from Sadiq to Rasha instantly. Cites an example, the Jewish people, when they came out of Mitzrayim, they were on the 50th level of Kiddushah. They saw the miracles of Yam Suf. They received the Torah from Sinai. What a level, what a madriga. Those Jews, after Moshe Rabbeinu, after the 40 days and 40 nights, they see Moshe didn't come back, they start worshipping the Egel, the golden calf. Aaron, right, I think we have some doors, those sliding doors in the back. I think if we close them, we'll cut off some of that noise. There's doors in between there. The Jewish people worship the Egel. How? How do you go from one level to another level? How do you go so fast? How do you fall from the 50th level of Kedushah to Avodah Zarah? Like that. You know what the rabbi says? Yetzer Hara says Moshe is not coming back. The day Moshe didn't come back was a black, gloomy day. There were black clouds outside. The world was in chaos. The Jewish people got to Mount Sinai. They see Moshe Rabbeinu's casket on top of the mountain. They see Moshe dead. Yetzer Hara is gassing them up. The Jewish people saw Moshe dead on top of the mountain. They see black clouds. The world is topsy-turvy. They got into a very depressed state. What's it going to be? Ali is dead. Now what? Where are we going to go from here? What do we do? They got, as we say, flustered. And in this flustered, depressed state of unbalancedness, there's a statement like that, a state where they're not thinking rational, they're all helter-skelter, what are we going to do? Yetzer Hara's got the guy off balance. When a guy's off balance, you can make a big sale very fast. When a guy walks into your store and he's half drunk, you say, oh, we could sell this guy a lot of things. You bring him downstairs, you sell him the ivory, this guy. because this guy over here, he's drunk. See here? Well, you try to do that to the sober guys too. But you have a much better chance when a guy's not rational. When a guy's depressed, he's not rational. And when a guy's not rational, the Yitzhak can take a guy who's on a high, very high level, very fast, and say, go worship Abu Dazara. All right. Depression is the key and is the source to many people's demise. And Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitt says, one has to be very careful to limit his fall. You can't help it. People are going to get depressed. People are going to get upset. Life has ups and downs, like the stock market. There's ups and there's down. Not every down is, you know, all the way down to the bottom, but it's up and down, up and down. You can't help that. That's the way of life. The trick, the rabbi says, is when you're in the low, to make sure you're able to cushion your fall. And you know that you're very vulnerable when you're upset. When a guy's in a bad mood, a guy can be in a rut. Sometimes it takes a guy 1 or 2 or 3 weeks to get out of it. Guy just like, I don't feel I'm out of it. Be very careful. Because when you're out of it, you're a little DP. Yes, that's his beauty. You're making my job much easier. What takes me 15 years on a normal guy, I can fix you up in a couple of days now. And then you come out of your depression, you say, oh, how do I get over here? What am I doing sitting in the church? How do I get to doing this over here? Oh, yeah. See that depression? There was a fellow, listen to the story, I mean, this is from the Torah. There was a fellow, went in the middle of the camp of Israel, stood up in front of everybody, and he blessed God. Now, he really didn't bless God. He did the opposite of blessing God. But you can't even say what he did. It's such a bad sin. Blasphemy. In front of all the people. He did the opposite of blessing God. So I don't want to say it. I'm scared to say such a thing. Just to hear the concept that someone can curse, it's frightening. And he went. He committed blasphemy. You say, how can a guy do this? Guy lives in the Lord. His rabbi is Moshe Rabbeinu. He came out of Egypt. He saw miracles. How could the... You want to tell me a guy has claims against God in his heart? Guy's upset. Guy doesn't understand. I hear it. Listen. But to go to such an extreme in front of all clients failing. Scream out what he did. How? The Gemara says that Rashi brings it down on the spot. This fellow was a son of a Jewish lady and his father was an Egyptian. So he's Jewish. So he went, he's giving out pieces of, you know, they're in the Midbar. Every tribe has their section where they're camped out. So he says, you know something, I want to camp out in the Shevet Dan's area. He says, my mother's from the tribe of Dan. So he takes his tent, finds a little real estate where the Shevet Dan is. He goes, he sets up shop over there. So the people of Dan say, oh, no, what are you doing over here? Who are you? Are you from Dan? Are you part of our tribe, buddy, that you're coming to start taking some real estate over here and you're moving in? Well, not so fair. What do you mean, my mother's from Dan? Oh, we don't know the lawyer. Gotta go to Moshe. He goes to court. Moshe has a court in his house. Go to the tent of Moshe. Moshe sits down with him. What's the problem, man? When this guy moved in over here? You want to throw him off the block. He doesn't belong. He's not from Dan. Are you from here? My mother's from Dan. Moshe says, what? Your mother's from Dan? Sorry. When it comes to your lineage, we go after the father. If your father's a Kohen, you're a Kohen. When it comes to your Jewishness, it goes after the mother. But Kohen, Levi, Israel, your tribal affiliation goes after the father. Your father's an Egyptian. So go put your tent in Cairo. But you know, you have no rights to go move into Dan's territory. And Moshe Rabbeinu bangs the table, court is closed, that's the ruling, you're guilty. Take down your tent. Guy lost a court case. That's a setback, it's a big setback. We can relate to this. Many times a guy gets a parking ticket, he goes to court, he has to go there, and he fights the ticket and he loses. He's upset. It's an inconvenience. It's upsetting. You put time into it. They're telling you you're wrong. You have to pay money. So, he comes out of the tent of Moshe, and what does this guy do? He vents his anger towards God and says what he says. You know what brought him to that state? What brought him to that state was he didn't have to deal with a setback. The guy was upset. The case was against him. The judge ruled against him. He got a little depressed. Had a little test, a little trial, tribulation. He failed it. Bingo. He fell off the deep end. Look how scary this is. Look at the enemy that we're faced against, because nobody in this room is going to say, well, I don't want, this doesn't apply to me, I never get depressed, I never get upset. Show me a guy in the world that doesn't get upset. Show me a guy that from when he was born till he dies, everything's smooth, everything's nice, no hassles, no nothing. You're learning over here, if a guy is in a bad mood, be very careful, the Yetzirah's after you. And the worst guy? The worst guy in our religion is a guy that's Shana Upidish. A guy that went to yeshiva. He learned, studied, read Gemara, read Lishoni, read Halacha. The guy has a knowledge. And then, something happened to him. He was faced with a couple of tests of Olam Hazeh, and he went after his desires. And he leaves the yeshiva. And he goes off the path. These guys that learn and go off the path, you see when they go off the deep end. And why do they go so far? The guy learned, how can he go so to one extreme? Because the guy failed the big test. You were in Olam Haba. You were studying, you were learning, and now you blew it. You went after the Tavot of Olam Hazeh. You fail the test, you fall very fast. And it's upsetting. Guy knows, yeah, I'm doing the wrong thing. When a guy knows he's doing the wrong thing, and he can't control his fall, there's no telling where he'll end up. Is it possible to control this depression, gentlemen? Well, there was a king called Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo's a champ. Shlomo teaches you a big lesson. Shlomo was the king of the whole world. Besides being the king of the whole world, he was the king over the demons. He was the king over the angels. So one day he summons the head of the demons, the chief of the demons. And I see guys in the back already saying, what are you, demons over here? Where's catching on demons? Where's Dr. Seuss over here? Where's demons over here? That's from the card. There are such things as demons. This is a fact. Shedim. And the head of the Shedim has a name. We know the guy. The guy's name is Ashmadai. Ever hear of him? Okay. Shlomo summons Ashmadai to the palace. He's talking to him. He needed him for certain items for the Beit HaMikdash. So in his conversation with Ashmadai, Ashmadai's a tough guy. You know, head of the demons like, you know, John Gotti, the mafioso.
What was he needing?
He needed him to find a certain worm that cuts the shamir, to cut the rocks of the Beit HaMikdash, and he helped him out. But in the conversation, you know, Shlomo's picking on the guy. Hey, what makes the Shedim so great? You know, you have any power? What do you do that's so, Ashmadai said, oh yeah, give me that ring off your finger and I'll show you what I can do. Shlomo used to have a ring that had the name of God on it. Very holy ring. He says, here's the ring. He takes the ring, Ashmadai eats the ring. After he eats the ring, he takes Shlomo, picks him up, and throws him 400 parsah. He threw him. Hundreds of miles. It sounds a little strange to the ear. But, you know, this is what happened. Don't ask questions on the school. Took him, chucked him hundreds of miles away. He doesn't have anything. He has his stick, he has his garment, his crown, nothing. When the crown fell off, he lands somewhere. Now he's there. He's walking around the streets. but Ani Shlomo. Okay, I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. Shlomo, who are you, Shlomo? One guy walking in the street with a stick and act like me, Shlomo Amelech. He goes to the next guy, Ani Shlomo ben David. Yeah, okay. Before Shlomo. Each guy is going to claiming that he's Shlomo Amelech, and he's crazy. And then what's all this? Some not walking around the street. You used to have a guy in Lakewood Yeshiva. He used to come collect money every morning. He's like, I'm Mashiach. Okay, you're Mashiach. Another guy used to come dressed up look like Abe Lincoln every morning. A long black coat and a big black hat. Okay, you got crazy guys in the world. So this guy's crazy. Call himself Shlomo Amelech. Thomas. Shlomo Amelech. You got to picture the situation. He was the king over the whole entire world. The most important, the most powerful man. And now, he's relegated to a fellow that has a staff, the clothes on his back, and nobody even believes him that he's saying who he is. This can cause a guy to commit suicide. This can cause it. We've seen in government when people were, you know, resigned from their political posts that offered them a lot of kavod. When they were deprived from that kavod, some of them committed suicide. And they were in much less prestigious positions than King Solomon.
That's permanent.
He knows he's going to
get back.
No, he doesn't. That's the funny part about the story. King Solomon did not know anything. They didn't believe him. Ashmadai took over the kingdom. And he portrayed himself as King Solomon. Ashmadai is a shit. So he put on an image like King Solomon. He's sitting on the throne. Everyone thinks that that's Shlomo. They don't even know where Shlomo is walking around the street somewhere in Harlem trying to get his job back. He's yeah, the king. He's in Israel. He's in Jerusalem.
But he still has a quest there. He still has a mission to prove himself to be Shlomo, a guy who is the king of...
You're right, then. You're right. With all that, it takes a very strong character and a man of very strong conviction and emotion to say... We got a little setback over here, but it's not going to fluster me. I'm not going to let this unbalance me. It's a big thing. And sure enough, after a while, the Sanhedrin starts to analyze. Are you guys saying the truth over here? How many times are you going to tell it? Let's have an investigation. They go investigate. They check out this king, this imposter guy that looks like Shlomo. They find out that he's calling his wives, and he wants to sleep with his wives when they're nidah. And King Solomon would never do that. Furthermore, the imposter that looked like King Solomon went to his mother Bathsheba and wanted to sleep with her, which Shlomo would never do such a thing. Furthermore, he's asking all type of cockamamie questions to the Sanhedrin that Shlomo would never ask. So after, and they notice that he never takes off his shoes. And he goes to sleep with his socks on. Because Shedim don't have feet. Their feet are like chicken feet. So he wants to cover the feet. So they said, something's going on with this guy over there. Then they realize that this guy's an imposter. So they finally brought Shlomo back. They put the name of God in front of Ashmadai. He runs away. But Shlomo HaMelech shows us a perfect example of someone that was faced with a real test, a real challenge. That was probably the low point of King Solomon's life. Riches to rags. He went from the most important person to a person that had nothing, didn't have food and money in his pocket to eat. And King Solomon was a king at that time. He acted like a king. There was no difference if King Solomon was the king over the whole entire world or was the king over that one stick. King Solomon rose to the occasion to not let this failure, so to speak, this little down curve on the scale, on the graph, fluster him and throw him off balance. What does allegorical mean? Did this actually happen? I'm going to give you a rule. Alan, I'm giving you a rule now in this class. We speak the truth in this class. Yeah, most of the things that we say, 99.9% of the things should be taken literal, unless I tell you that it's a mashal, or it's a, this thing never happened. These are one of the, part of the 99% of the things that happen, and it's true, and
not a mashal,
not allegorical, not nothing. This is the real, I do admit to you, that to the ear it sounds somewhat, okay, Mars, you said it. I heard. Sounds somewhat strange. But in any event, this is the Kabbalah we have from the Hachamim. Shlomo HaMelech writes Pesukim on this in Kohelet. telling the story of his quest and his fights with Ashmedai and then his resurgence to become king. Gentlemen, it's not easy to come out victorious when faced with upset and failure. And we're going to have to tonight try to think of a way that we can overcome it. Because all of us are going to get depressed. Whether you like it or not, we'll all wake up one morning on the wrong side of the bed, and we're going to be in a bad mood. And if you're agreeing with the premises that we're saying tonight, that you're very vulnerable during that state, we're going to have to think of a solution to get you out of that. Now, I'm not a druggist, you know, I can prescribe you Prozac, and then we can finish the whole situation over here. But that's not really our derech over here, to prescribe drugs. We're going to try to prescribe a Torah drug over here tonight that might be able to help. You all believe that you're made up of two parts. You all believe that you do have a neshama. The question is, how important do you think your neshama is to the other parts of your body? If you ask a guy in the center in the basketball court, say, what's the most important part of your body? He'll tell you, my legs, my arms, you need to shoot, the biceps. And if you start telling, well, where does the neshama fit in exactly to your body? No, neshama is a vital item, very, very important, by the way. You believe you have an neshama? Yeah, I believe I have one. Exactly. What importance? I don't know, it's important, it's an item. But, you know, it doesn't help my foul shot. So therefore, the neshama is not such, you know, you need it, it's a good thing, Hashem gives you one, I'll take it. But, you know, leave me alone. Now, for the guys that come to class and understand that without a neshama, you can't move those arms to shoot the foul shot. Without a neshama, the legs don't work, the eyes don't see, the brain doesn't think. The most important organ in your whole body is your neshama. How do you like that? The neshama is the battery. You have a video game, which is very important, but if you don't have batteries, the thing don't work. So really the most important thing is the batteries. The neshama is the battery. Now, if that's true and you all agree, because nobody's asking questions on that, the neshama is the most important organ in the body, then you would agree that you have to feed this neshama once in a while. If it's an organism, it's a living thing, it needs sustenance, it needs to eat. Now, if you can figure out what the neshama lives on, and get a trainer to come to your house once in a while, or go to a trainer once in a while, who works out on building up the neshama's muscles, and the neshama's tendons, and the neshama's health, so you're in good shape. Now, if you have a neshama that's starving, then eat for a long time, because the neshama doesn't benefit from the steak you ate for dinner tonight. You shouldn't go for that. That's physical pleasure. Your legs like that, but the neshama don't go for that. If your neshama is not eating, it's hungry. If you have a hungry neshama, you're going to be depressed. Because that's, you are your neshama. So if your neshama is not eating healthy, you're not going to feel good. And if you're not going to feel good, you're going to feel upset. If you feel upset, you're finished. You're doomed. Yetzirah has you where he wants you. So one of the tricks we're going to give you tonight is to save yourself from being upset, because physical pleasures will not make you happy. You know that already. A boy buys a computer. Daddy, I love you. Just buy me the computer. I'll be happy. I won't hassle you. That's all I want. Finished. That's it. I'm in. He gets the computer. I love you. 2 weeks after he gets the computer, he falls out. He doesn't touch the computer. The computer's passe. He moves on to the next item. But you said the computer's going to make you happy. I thought it was, but it's not. Same thing with cars. Same thing with other things. Physical pleasures cannot make a guy happy. Because really, your main part of your body is not physical. Your main part is spiritual. If you're not feeding that spiritual, you're going to be upset. Torah, Hashem, Tibima, Meshivat, Nafesh. The Torah settles a person. The Torah keeps a person stable. If you're not going learning Torah on a daily basis, or on a weekly basis, if you understand that you have to have a trainer, you understand that you have to go work out, that you don't understand that you have to give your neshama the nutrients that it deserves? The nutrients that it needs that you can function properly? If you're not learning Torah, your neshama is starving, it's undernourished. And if you have an undernourished neshama, you're going to be in a bad mood. You're not going to be happy and you're going to be searching. What is it? Why aren't I getting out of this over here? You ever know the feeling when you come out of a class, you feel good? You don't know what it is, but you feel good. You know you did the right thing, like there's a certain type of feeling that you have. Torah, learning Torah is Prozac. Learning Torah is the drug that can get a person stable, happy, and at ease with himself. And if you don't have it, you don't have a shot. I'm not offering any other advice. You don't come to me after and say, that's a good idea, you told me Torah. Give me a second. Right, what else? Give me something else? That's it. That's the advice. This is the therapist. I'm giving you therapy now. I'm telling you, I went through it. I know it. It's true. That's it. But I will say another thing. Can't hide from you. One time I was in yeshiva. I walked into the yeshiva with a big ice cream sundae. Vanilla, chocolate, pistachio, the banana, the whipped cream, the cherry, the chocolate,
Walnuts also one?
Walnuts.
We walked in with it, so the rabbi sees me. And I forget, Rabbi Avis sees me, and his face gets very serious. And he says, Eliyahu, are you alright? I say, I'm looking, I'm alright. What am I doing? I'm an innocent little boy with a smile on my face, walking with ice cream, the most beautiful, beautiful thing in the world, looking with an ice cream cone. And the rabbi says, is everything okay, Rabbi? Is there a problem? I said, I don't know, Rabbi. Maybe there is a problem. I'm not aware of the problem. So he says, when we were in yeshiva, he says, if you saw a guy eating ice cream, that meant that he was like very depressed. So therefore, when a guy's depressed, what did the rabbi used to tell? Go to the ice cream store, take a break. Sugar, have a little candy, do something. You're walking in there with a big sundae like that. You must be suicidal. I thought, I'm just eating ice cream. Eat ice cream. Oh, no, I just eating ice cream. The sham ice cream. People do that. You mean you just spoil yourself, okay? Without a reason. Just to go, to indulge? Very interesting. And I'm saying this guy's from us. Forget it, I do this all the time. But the rabbi was teaching you something. There are certain tricks when a guy feels himself in a slump. Go out, have ice cream. Go out, take a drive. Go out, take a break. Go to the basketball court, shoot some hoops. Yeah! Imagine that. You see, a rabbi's telling you to go shoot basketball. How do you like that? Because you do anything, we'll take a stolen korban on the mizbeah to stop a guy from getting depressed. So we're not going to let a guy play some basketball to head off depression. We're not going to let a guy eat an ice cream cone. Go take a swim. Gotta let it out. Go jog around the block. Don't all of a sudden become a Hasid. No, you can't. It's not right. Torah's not against this. The opposite. If sometimes you don't let yourself... I'm actually very careful with my work. I don't want anyone to misunderstand me. A guy's walking out now. And next Wednesday night, no one's coming to class. Goes to all playing basketball, eating ice cream. I lost all my customers. You know, I don't want you to take it the wrong way. I don't mean now giving you a head now to go... become a indulgent fellow. You must always exercise self-control. I will tell you the end of the story. Remember, I even tell you, and even when we were depressed and we let ourselves go get ice cream, it was a vanilla ice cream. One scoop. It wasn't, you know, even when we did give in, it was very, you know, We didn't just yell, give me the kitchen sink.
It was very,
controlled. So, you know, you have to be a hacham and you have to know exactly your purpose. But once in a while, especially in our generation and the society we live in, which is very fast-paced, fast-moving, that, you know, guy can get in a rut very quickly with all the hassles and the problems that hit a guy every single day. Once in a while, you gotta relax kosher. I didn't say go sit on your couch and turn on the TV. That'll never tell you to do. Maybe it's a good idea when you're depressed to go take the TV and throw it out the window. That's a good way to vent your frustration. But think of different things that you like to do. I like to go around the block, take a cigar. Do something that's a little letting yourself, you know, relax a little in order to get you out. If it means calling your friend, do me a favor, Jackie, pick me up, take me somewhere. Not have something to do in Avera, because that's counterproductive. Because you're going to go through an Avera, after the Avera, it only brings more guilt. And guilt brings more depression. So you only did worse. I'm not saying Avera has b'shalom. I'm trying to figure out, you have to learn Torah, that's first. Learn Torah, that's the positive. But, you can't always do that. Not always accessible to you. You have to think of different methods, different things that make it easy. Don't let yourself fall. I find a lot of times when I read the stories about the Tzaddikim, it's a great thing. Go to the bookstore, go to Eichler's, go to any bookstore you like, go to Mikota Seferi, we're not giving commercials over here now. Go to any bookstore you want, and go buy English books about the Tzaddikim. Hafez Haim, the Stifler Rabbi, Chavez Ha'adim, there's books about them written in English. You read it. It's very, very inspiring to read books about our all-stars, our greats. But I will be honest with you. A lot of times when I read these books about the Gedolim, you close the book and you read about how much they learned, and how much they studied, and how much they were connected with God 24 hours a day, and they saw angels, and they did everything. And you close the book and you say, you know, you're a Jedman. You're a Josh. You think you're giving a class Wednesday night, you think you're a big shot. What are you? Where do you stand compared to these? It gets a little upset. I bought a book to get inspired. To say, you know, hey, let's go. I want to be like these. And you close the book and you say, what are the odds I'm going to be a tenth of a millionth of what these people are? So whenever you read these books, I'm going to give you a trick to cut off depression when you get to that. You shouldn't get... That book should inspire you to grow, not to cut you back to go backwards. You have to remember, this is not from Israel, what this says. The storybooks only tell you the victories. So we look at the Tzaddikim, we say they were victorious people all the time. They never lost. Then we look at ourselves and say, how could you never lose? You lose battles sometimes, they never lost. That's not true. The Hafetz Chaim never spoke Lashon Hara. The Hafetz Chaim definitely had a Yetzer Hara. The Hafetz Chaim definitely had challenges. And maybe even the Hafetz Chaim once, twice, he fell and spoke Lashon Hara. But you know what the greatness of the Hafetz Chaim was? He got up. After the setback, he didn't say, it's impossible, forget about it, you know, something I'm going on. Next, I can't do it. Kisheva yipol sadiq vekav. The sadiq falls 7 times. You know what the greatness of a sadiq is? He gets up. It's like a baby. You ever watch a baby trying to walk? He falls, he gets up. Don't think the sadiqim are born sadiqim. It's easy for them to have no yetzer. They fall. You're not going to write a book how the sadiq fell. You can't sell so many books like that. But that's the behind the scenes of how they became great. They fell. They lost some battles. But they never gave up. They committed an Avera. No less than we committed an Avera. But they didn't let that sin say, ah, you're a nothing, you're a loser, you're a yo-yo, you're not gonna, you can't do it. Look, you fell again for the 20th time, you did the same, I won't give up, you can't, never give up. You have to fight that yitzhar hara till the day you die, you gotta kill him. The yitzhar hara is waiting for you to put up the white flag. Once you put up the white flag, whoo-hoo, right down. Our rabbis acted in the most serious of times, they never lost their cool. They were composed. The Nodav Yehuda, the great rabbi of Yaskinland, that was sitting in his office one day, a fellow comes into his room, the third story of a building, waving an axe. Nodav Yehuda sitting and learning, and Mishnun hops into the room with an axe, waving, Rabbi, I'm going to kill you. Nodav Yehuda gets up, deal with the guy. He said, you rabbis, you think you're so tzaddikim, malachim? You're such a malach. I want you to jump out the window. Jump out the window, it's 100 feet. Jump out the window. W, that's thinking. Jump out the window, I die. I don't jump out the window, the guy's going to axe my head off. Very on spot. Keeps his composure. Doesn't get flustered. Tells the guy, I got a better one for you. Anybody can jump out a window, but I can do a better trick. I can go downstairs and jump up to the window. So the guy waving there says, you can do that? I want to see that. So that way that goes downstairs, runs away. He's the guy upstairs waving the axe like he knew that he was. So you see over here, the Hachamim, even when they were in that position of your, it's over. Wait. They kept their composure. Many times we lose our composure for much less things. You know, someone says the wrong word to us, already we become lunatics. Guy doesn't invite you to a wedding, a guy sitting in your seat. There's a little miscommunication and misunderstanding right away. Oh, World War III. Crazy. We say things that we regret, and we take it as a hit, as a permissibility to do things that, you know, that are against the Torah because we're upset, we're angry, and we're in a bad mood. Guy takes the glass, throws it on the floor. Why do you? I'm in a bad mood. I'm in a bad mood. You have a hit to be crazy, to do crazy things. You have a hit to be a mishnu because you're in a bad mood. You have a hit to make avirot because you're in a bad mood. Yeah, because when you're in a bad mood, you fall very quickly. The Yetzirah will make you fall. David HaMelech was digging the foundation of the Beit HaMikdash, and he hit a main pipe. The pipe that leads to the underground waters, and it started, bursted the pipe. It was a break, a leak. And the flood started to come. And the world at that moment was going to be flooded. If they were not able to seal that pipe up, the world was going to be destroyed, the Gemara says. He hit the pipe, you're the one, danger, don't touch. Hit right on it. David HaMelech, composed, doesn't lose his mind. He's facing a situation where they push the red button where there's going to be a nuclear war. What kind of havoc? What kind of craziness would the president be in that situation? He just pushed the red button. Okay, relax. Figure out what we're going to do now. Rabbi Ahitophel, how do we get out of this problem? Take the name of God and throw it in there. Thank you very much. Writes it on a piece of clay, throws it in there, the water stops. Thank you. Instead of going wild, instead of running like a lunatic, the flood, get the boat, get the raft, we're drowning. Go to the rabbi, get the answer. And the rabbi said that he knew the answer. So why did he just throw the clay in right away? Because it's derech eretz, you ask your rabbi. Even in such a situation, you're worried about the formality of going to leave it. The rabbi understands that. I couldn't come to you because the world was blowing up, so I had to do it myself. No, formality, but you got to do it. The way of a Jew is, no matter what happens to him, it's a test. And they're all looking at you in Shamayim. They want to see you act like King Solomon with his stick. I'm still king. Not gonna fluster me, Yitzhak. How are you trying to throw me off it? Not gonna work. In order for the Jew to get thrown off, big test cards that have to happen to him. It's not so easy to unbalance a Jew. The Jew has to be strong. The Jew has to fight back. He can't let the trials and tribulations and his failures get to him. Kisheva yipol sadiq mekam. The sadiq has to rise. King Shaul. Remember last week in the Haftarah about King Shaul? God tells him, go fight Amalek. Don't bring back any prisoners, kill everybody. Comes back with all the sheep. Shemuel and Abi sees him, he says, Umeh kolason, what's the meh? I hear the meh over here. The ba. He says, what do you mean? I brought these sheep, I'm going to bring them korban to God. Does God want your sacrifices? You didn't listen. The kingdom is going to be taken away from you. You were not supposed to bring these as korbanot. You were supposed to destroy them. King Shaul thought he was doing a mitzvah. And then he hears the most upsetting news of his whole entire life, his whole career, telling him, you're fired. You're no longer the king. What a setback. And he admits his failure. Hatati. I sinned. And the subsequent pesukim are very interesting. He tells King Shaul, tells Shemuel and Navi, Shemuel, could you please come to me in front of all the people and bring sacrifices with me? I want you to come with me to bring a public sacrifice. Shaul starts, Shemuel, I can't now. God despised you. I can't go with you. Shaul, please, please come with me in front of the people to bring a sacrifice. And then Shemuel acquiesces. What was King Shaul doing? You gotta come with me. Please come with me in public to bring a sacrifice. Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitt says, Shaul said, I'm in a very serious situation here. I'm on a down. I better eat ice cream fast. Where's the closest Carvel? Because instead of being the anointed one, I'm the despised one now. My whole life is shattered in front of me. I'm very vulnerable. Shaul was looking for a trick to stop the fall. Shemuel, please come with me in front of the nation and bring a sacrifice with me. Show me a little support. I need a little confidence built over here. I need a little chizuk. If you come with me in front of all the people and bring a sacrifice to me, that gives me a little credibility. That gives me a little pat on the back. Makes me feel a little good. This was a technique and a strategy of Shaul. Does he care if Shemuel's with him or not? This was a personal favor he was asking. I'm falling, Shemuel. Help me. Come with me, please. Support me. I don't want to fall. I cannot. I got to get out of this depression. I can't be 1 minute depressed. It's too dangerous. I worked too hard in my life to be a tzaddik that I am, to lose it in one shot. And there was tzaddikim that lost it in one shot. Yeshu, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, was a student of one of the greatest Tanaim, Rabbi Yoshua ben Pedachia. He was a student of a Tana. Not a small thing. To be a student of a Tana is not sitting in a Wednesday night class getting entertained. To be a student of a Tana, we couldn't understand what the Tanaim was saying. Tanaim were very deep, they were very holy. You gotta be a big man to be a student of a Tana. He was a Talmid of Rabbi Yoshua. It's a big thing, big iron. And Yoshua ben Perachiah, the rabbi, Rabbi Yoshua saw a student make a mistake, so he threw him out of the yeshiva. Whatever it was. A little setback there for the Yeshua. What was it? Okay, you want to hear the story? You know the story. Went to a hotel. Yeshua went to a hotel. He gets into the hotel. So he sees the concierge, the lady behind the desk. She was very, very courteous to them. His room, is it this, is it that. So the Yeshua says, what a very nice lady. So Yeshua says, yeah, she's okay, but her eyes are a little cockeyed. He says, you pervert. I'm not talking about her eyes. Yeah, she's okay. She's okay. I'll spoil. You think I'm a pervert like you? You think I'm complimenting her looks? I'm talking about how we do it. Right away he said already, it's not enough that this guy is looking at G's, but he suspects me of looking at G's like him.
Forget about it. Gish, get out of here. You know, it's not, don't think it's so easy to be a student of a Tana. Oh my God, this is there, I do whatever I want, and they throw you out of here. Get out of here. I'm wasting my time with you. It was a setback for Yeshu. Because of that setback, Yeshu started another religion. He blasphemized. He did. He went. He became. He did. He cursed the religion. All because what? He learned. He did. But there was a little failure. His rabbi got upset at him. And because his rabbi couldn't deal with it. He wasn't like King Solomon that had a setback and said, stop handling. It wasn't like Shaul that the ice cream out.
Remember Yeshu what was going to happen?
He did. And he tried to bring him back. But it was a big setback for him. Irreparable damage was caused. He couldn't recover. And because of that, non-recovery, you have all religion today. For a guy that couldn't deal with rejection, a guy that couldn't deal with a problem, guy got fired from his job, finished, now start a whole religion because of that. So go to another yeshiva, go to another rabbi, work it out. Can deal with it. Look at this, how much we suffered because of a person that didn't know how to deal with a problem. That let himself go wild, that took the leashes off his neck. I'm upset, finished, scorned everything. Ruth and Orpah, two righteous ladies. At least at one time they were. And they go to their mother-in-law Naomi. We're staying with you. We're not going. We're going back to Israel with you. And we're convert. We'll convert. No, go back. You're the daughters of kings. I have a hard life. I'm destitute. I have no children for you to marry. Go back. No, we're staying with you. Sadiqim said, carry on. What sacrifice? They could have went back to palaces to live a rich life. Instead, they see the greatness of Naomi and they say, we're going to live with you. We'd rather be poor forever. We'd rather be old maids and never get married, but to be in your presence. A big move, big statement. No, go back. You know what Orpah says? All right, I'll see you later. Ruth says, I'm staying. And Orpah goes back. That night that Orpah went back to Moab, she had relations with 100 men, the Gemara says. And a dog. That's not allegorical. And the rabbis are perplexed. How could it be? Such a righteous lady, she was willing to give up everything. She was willing to give up the whole world. All of a sudden, she makes one bad decision, boom, she becomes a marsha. She realized she made a mistake. On the way back, she said, I failed. Ruth is a champ. I'm a loser. She stayed. I couldn't have the strength and the conviction to do what Ruth did. And she got beat. She got upset. And she got down on herself. And when you get down on yourself, the Yetzer HaRa comes and helps you. You are a loser. You're a big loser. You failed. You're a nothing. It's over. When you think it's over, that's it. So I say, give up. Do anything you want. Finish. 100 men. Kel, finish. I'm a loser. I stink. Look at that. Look how bad. You see a guy in a bed. Move, fellas, you gotta get him out of it fast. So your obligation, you see a friend that's having a hard time, he's a little upset. It's an obligation of friends to go mehazek each other. When Yosef was in jail with these gangsters, the guys that put him there, the baker, the butler, Pasuk says one morning he gets up, he sees them all upset. He says, why are you all upset? Why are you so down this morning? And the rabbis learned from that. You have a mitzvah to ask when you see a friend upset, not to walk out of the chilek, you have a problem, get involved with this guy now. What happened to him? Even though the guy's a bit, you're living with him in jail, bottom line. He's your friend now. You gotta ask. You gotta be concerned. I'll finish with one pasuk. That is so much to say on this subject.
so much to say on the subject. All right, we'll say one more pasuk and we'll finish. There's a pasuk in Kohelet. King Solomon says it. What's the pasuk? Very, very joyful. Semach bachur b'yaldutecha. King Solomon says, young man, enjoy your youth. Have a good time. V'yitibecha lebecha b'imeh bachurotecha. Fill your heart with pleasure. Go eat good. Go drink good. Buy fancy clothes. King Solomon. Young man, live. Enjoy life. Walk in the ways of your heart. Whatever your heart's desire. And then, whatever you look at, you want it, go after it. And after he tells the guy to enjoy, have a good time, ta'aba, he zings you at the end of the pasuk. But no one thing. You're going to get judged for every single one of these things. And the question is a contradictory only. In the beginning you tell the guy, Sachten, enjoy, eat, drink. So the guy goes, enjoys, he drinks, he finishes. Oh, you're going to get an apple, all that. What do you mean? So if the guy doesn't read the end of the pasuk, he's doomed. He ends at the beginning, he ends at mid-pasuk. So the rabbis explain like this, the Beit Chai says, this is the Yetzer Hara talking. Shlomo is paraphrasing the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara tells the young men like yourselves, you're a young man, go out and enjoy life, go to the city, go party, have a good time, fill your heart's desires, you only live once, bite the big apple of life. Don't worry, when you get it, become old, you'll make the Shuvah. It's time for that. You'll get serious. You see other people have done it. 40 years old, 45 years old, they settle down. What the hell? Are you going to ruin your childhood? Oh, wow! But of course, you'll make the Shuvah when you get older. No question about it. But in the meantime, have good fun. So the guy goes and enjoys himself, but yet, so I was pushing him, go, go. The guy gets 45, 50, 55 years old, he's time to settle down. He's about to make Teshuvah. What does the Yetzirah come and say? Veda. Oh, you're dead. You're gonna get killed, you have no shot. Teshuvah ain't gonna help you, buddy. You know what you did when you were young? You might as well just finish it. You were so bad. Think of what you did. You start thinking back. Oh, yeah, I was terrible. So bad. God. So the answer that sketches you when you're young, go enjoy and you'll make this true vow when you get older. And when you get older, the answer that sketches you will put you in depression and says, what? This true vow for you? Impossible. All the Yom Kippur books in the shul won't be enough for Anna for you, for you then. All the bangings. Your fist will fall off before you get this one out. And that's what we mean when we say in the Tefillah, the Haser HaSatan Lefanenu Maharenu. Remove the Satan from in front of us and remove the Satan from behind us. Before we're ready to do a sin, we're hesitant, we don't want to do it. The Yetzirah comes in front of us, and he comes and says, go, what are you worried about? You make the Shuvah. Take away the Satan before we make the sin. The Satan that sketches us, do it, don't worry, you'll handle it later. And then after you do the sin, you know what the Satan tells you? You're finished. Oh no, you can't make the Shuvah on this one, buddy. Forget about it. Just do another one, because ain't going to accept the Shuvah for this one. That's the Satan Harer, that's the Satan after the fact. The Satan is trying to get you upset. He's trying you to put up the white flag and give up hope. Never give up on yourself. I don't care what you did. This is God says.
no matter what you did, no matter how many times you did it, no matter where you went and where you came from, God never gives up on a Jew. There's always hope. His hand is waiting. He's your father. He's come back. But the Yetzirah is on commission. He's got to make sure you don't come back. Don't fall into his trap. The enemy is depression. Ivdu et Hashem b'simha. Serve God out of happiness. Fellas, you all walk out of this class, you're all happy. But you're really happy. You didn't make any money tonight in this class. We didn't give out anything. Just sat back, and we gave your neshama some vitamins that it needs. And you feel very good about yourself because your neshama feels very healthy. So you walk out of this class, somebody says, where were you tonight, Jack? I was involved with my trainer. We go to a trainer every Wednesday night. Yeah, what do you do? What does he work on? The soul. It's an item. Soul. Works on the soul, yeah. He gives me goods. Work, tramp. Very tired. I gotta go see. Very tired. It was a sweat. It was a big thing. This is a workout, gentlemen. It's no difference what you're doing tonight than what those guys doing in the center on the third floor. They're involved in physical training. That's okay. But it's not gonna make you happy. You need the third floor in the center when you're depressed. You need the basketball court when, you know, things are not good. You got it let out. Go play your ball, go work out, go lift weights, go smoke your cigar, go take a ride down the block, go eat your ice cream, whatever you have to do in the law. Vent it out a little. But the biggest key, the biggest Prozac of our depression is learning Torah. Torah Tashem Tivna Meshivat Nafesh. That's why we call it the yeshiva. Why do you call it the yeshiva? Not because we're sitting all day. In the old days, they used to stand when they learned. They didn't call it an amida. So why do they call it a yeshiva? Yeshiva means to settle. Because Torah's miyashevet alto shel adam. The Torah settles a person's mind. Everyone's looking for happiness in this world. They're paying psychologists hundreds of dollars for a session to sit with the guy for a half hour. And the guy tells him how he tells him nothing. Tells him how much he owes him. But they don't have the answer. And you're thinking to yourself, is that possible? That all the psychologists and all them, I'm coming to Torah Center, second floor on a Wednesday, some guy, some little guy sitting there, he's got it. He's got the goods. He's giving me the secret impossible. How can I be so lucky to hear the event? I don't know why you're so lucky, but you're hearing it. Yeah, this is the goods. Study Torah. Learn. If anything, your Torah career should be enhancing. Should only be coming greater, not less. Should be going from one time a week to twice a week to three times to every morning. What they do it in that they train that every morning in the health club. They give devotion to that. You admit it tonight, gentlemen, by your silence, by your non-confrontational debates that you have with the teacher. I assume you're agreeing with me that the neshama is the key. So go work on it. Don't be depressed. Bring a stolen sacrifice in the temple. But don't make the Kohen depressed, because if the Kohen gets depressed, you have no Beit HaMikdash. If a human being, if a Jew gets depressed, you have no religion. Is that clear? Any questions on this subject?